Welcome to the DE Talk podcast. Tune in for dialogue between HR experts to amp up your HR strategies. Don't worry, we'll mix in a few laughs as we know you need it. The Great Resignation continues to be a theme for employers large and small as they grapple with how to address this ongoing talent concern. For many, it's been a wake-up call for how to improve elements like culture, flexibility, and benefits, while others have chosen to focus on employee engagement as a way to prevent the churn of employee turnover. It's natural for employees to come and go, but the pandemic has forever impacted the relationship employees have with their employers, and even the priorities they place on work-life balance. As diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging continue to drive workplace hiring efforts, the question remains, how do we shift the mindset from the great resignation to the great retention? This conversation remains near and dear to my heart. As a former HR practitioner and now the leader of an HR trade association, I know many listeners also share in this struggle and wonder what's next. Joining me today is Indianapolis-based marketing strategist, educator, and podcast host herself, Lorraine Ball, who is equally as passionate about this topic as me, and even has taken to LinkedIn to share her thoughts and suggestions on transforming your workplace to create an environment where people want to work. Let's dive in and get started. Lorraine, welcome to the DE Talk podcast. We're really happy to have you join us today.
It is so nice to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Oh, we're this is a topic, as I said, it's near and dear to my heart, but everyone I talk to, this is a main topic of conversation. You know, it's kind of like the old-fashioned conversation starters where we had to be creative, and this is its own conversation starter. So why don't we start by having you just share a little bit about yourself?
So I started my career actually as a school teacher. I have a background in elementary ed, and then went back for a degree in marketing.
Oh, wow.
And so I kind of have these sort of segments of my life, and then I spent about 20 years in corporate and primarily in marketing and creative roles. But the thing I was always brought in to do was to fix broken teams. And so I really built this attitude around lessons that I learned about how you created teams that worked. So that was sort of my goal when I left and started my own business. And I don't know if you remember, but in the early 2000s, unlike today, there were more jobs than people. And so companies really were not very concerned about employee retention. And so here I was with this idea that I could teach leaders to build high-performance teams, and ain't nobody buying. So I dropped back. I knew marketing, and that's what I built my business around. But I also always focused on using the techniques that I had perfected in corporate to build my own team. And that's really where my passion comes, because it works. You can build organizations where people are interested, passionate, and committed, but you have to be interested, passionate, committed too.
You know, you hit a really important point, but you're exactly right. You know, and I also, I'm kind of on the cusp between baby boomer and Gen X. But, you know, years ago, they didn't really care about stuff like that, you know, in corporate America. And I've spent almost my entire career in corporate America. And, you know, I've seen the change, and now having a much smaller nonprofit, you know, we have fun together, you know, and we collaborate well together, and we are very team driven, and we collaborate all the time. But what's interesting is, you know, even before 2000, you know, it was just like, get the work done. You know, I don't care what it takes, just get the work done, you know, and it's a whole different attitude today. So that was a really, you know, it was something I hadn't thought about for a long time, but you're exactly right. So I commented about you being a host of your own podcast. It's called More Than a Few Words. I'm shocked at how you've kind of sharpened it down to a 10-minute conversation. Maybe you can give me some lessons. But what has inspired you, and what is your favorite thing about podcasting?
So More Than a Few Words, it started with the advent of the iPhone. I got this shiny new iPhone, and I could record conversations, And I had an intern at the time who was like, you know, you were really made for podcasting. You like to talk. And so I would just whip out that phone when people came to the office. And the show was very unstructured. And it has evolved. I mean, I'm in my 13th year now.
Oh, wow.
And I've experimented with all sorts of formats. And what I have come to is, because I look at the user data, is that a lot of my audience, they are small business owners, and they're busy, and they're listening to the shows probably while they're doing something else, mm-hmm. maybe in their car between. And so the listens fall off after about 10 to 12 minutes.
Okay. That's probably a good thing. Maybe we should listen.
You know, yeah. Well, because what happens is you get to your destination or you get interrupted and people don't go back. And so that was part of the motivation to try to keep the episodes short. And the other thing it's inspired, and you've probably heard this quote, I was going to write you a short note, but I didn't have time, so I wrote you a long letter instead. And what I have found with a lot of longer podcasts is you weave around because you have the time. And you eventually get to that great nugget.
Well, see, we're gonna just make this be a little bit longer, Lorraine, so you have to hang on to that nugget for about 30 minutes.
I'm gonna treat this like 3 10-minute episodes. How's that?
That's perfect. And actually, just this morning I read Harvard Business Review said you need to come up with ways to help your employees get through things that they don't want to do. You know, we all have those types of tasks that you just think, oh, geez, do I really have to do that? But they say, listen to podcasts, listen to music, you know, do things while you're filing or while you're, you know, putting something away, cleaning your office, whatever it is. But use that time effectively, and then the time goes faster for one thing, and you're also kind of educating yourself on the other hand, you know. So there you go. You can listen to
absolutely
3 10-minute DE podcast. There you go. So, you know, it might as well just get right into the topic. You know, it's safe to say that business owners from the Fortune 500 to the mom and pop shops across the country have, you know, had to experience the fallout from the Great Resignation. So let's start here a second. The Bureau of Labor Statistics estimates that over 47 million Americans quit their jobs. I mean, that's like the, you know, most on record. And I'm sitting here wondering how people are going to live down the road. But, you know, how would you describe the Great Resignation, and how can employers mitigate the impact of it?
Well, as I'm looking at this, and it's interesting because my daughter was actually one of the people, she was one of the 47 million.
Oh, wow.
And so watching her go through her transition, and she's in her mid-30s, and so this was not an early stage career shift. And I don't know that everybody makes the shift quite the way she did, but she knew how long she could take to find her next job, and she was selective. And so watching her go through this process, what I saw was that she very quickly rejected a lot of companies, and then she zeroed in on a few companies. And the ones that really impressed her and the ones that she wanted to continue the conversations with were the companies that talked about the whole person. They had opportunities for advancement. They wanted to get to know her. They had an onboarding process. You know, the days mm-hmm. of hiring someone and throwing them into a job, that, you know, that doesn't work. And they're not going to put up with it, and they're not going to stay around long if they don't feel like they can be successful.
Yeah, well, and if something better comes along, they're going to keep mm-hmm. looking. If they, you know, we've seen that, I mean, throughout HR, and I'm sure your marketing background has touched HR a lot as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's interesting because, you know, I'm sure as well as I do that if people need money, they're going to take whatever comes to them first, but they're going to sure keep looking. You know, they're going to.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things, and this was even before the Great Resignation, one of the things that I saw that was changing was as the power shifted, there used to be some unwritten rules. When you were looking for a job, once you accepted an offer, once you agree, even go back a step, agreed to come in for an interview. And as I talk to peers, I'm hearing that people don't show up for interviews.
Oh, yeah.
accept jobs and then get a better offer. And so I think it's really hard, but I think companies need to be hedging their bets the way employees do. Interview multiple candidates. Have a first, second, and third choice. And don't cut your second and third choice completely loose.
Yeah.
Until you know for sure that the first choice is actually going to
show up
and take the job. And then, you know, I think you always have to be recruiting.
Well, you know what? I honestly, my favorite quote that I read probably 5 or 10 years ago, and I always think about this, and the quote was, or is, re-recruit your employees every day.
Mm. And I love that.
Yeah, I thought that was a great quote because, you know, you want your employees to want to come to work. Mm-hmm. And you want your employees to be part of the whole, you know, mission and the whole work process. And I think that's a great quote, and I try to follow that. Now, I don't want you to ask the employees here, but Jordan's smiling at me, so hopefully I do that. She's got a thumbs up, so that's good.
So absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to agree with you because I think, you know, that speaks to this idea of creating a place where people want to come to work.
Exactly. And I think, you know, I've been watching and, you know, I try to read what's important to do. It's always fun because our marketing team is just, I think, the best of the best. And every time I read things about, well, how to keep your employees engaged and how to, you know, take care of your employees during the pandemic, you know, try this, 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 and this. And it's like, well, our marketing team is already doing that. Thank you very much. you know, it's, but I will tell you, I think, two things. It was interesting when you were talking about your own daughter. My daughter, mid-30s, a little bit younger than that, but very close, and she actually left her position to go through a doctor of physical therapy program. She had been an athletic mm-hmm. trainer, and you know, I never thought about it until you were talking about your daughter and taking the time to find what she really wanted. But she's probably included in that Great Resignation because it mm-hmm. happened about a year and a half ago, you know, and boom, she went to school and, you know, she's doing that for 2.5 years, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's probably part of the Great Resignation as well. So, yeah, there are, I'm sure, a lot of types of folks. I mean, do you think that there are certain industries that have been impacted more than others? I know my daughter was in healthcare by the time she was working for the Cleveland Clinic in orthopedics. But mm-hmm. I'm sure, aside from healthcare, do you think there are other industries that have been impacted a lot more than others?
Well, I think what I've read is that a lot of the industries that are filled with what we would consider essential workers mm-hmm. are probably some of the ones that have seen the greatest turnover. Medical professionals, teachers, these are people that were really pushed to their limits during the pandemic. And so I think their decision to leave, change jobs, change careers is probably directly connected or much more so connected to the pandemic and the lingering effects of the pandemic mm-hmm. than maybe other industries. But I also think even prior to the pandemic, there was a shift in I don't want to refer to it as work ethic because it's not that young professionals don't work as hard as us boomers and Gen Xers, but they work differently.
Yeah, they do.
And there is a shift in what they want from a job and from a career. And I think the pandemic certainly accelerated that and gave him a chance to think about it a little bit more. And it also gave him an opportunity to have conversations with their employers that would never have been possible before. And I'll give you a personal example. I loved the fact that my agency was an in-person agency. Mm-hmm. We had an office in a little house. It was very cozy. People came in. They came and left. There was a lot of flexibility in terms of when they worked. But for the most part, we were there. And I really thought that that was the most productive environment. And the pandemic forced us home, and we adapted. And then we came back. And what I saw when we came back was that there were certain members of the team that were like, you know, Lorraine, I get more done at home. Mm-hmm. And in the past, I would never have, I would have said, no, you have to be here. But having lived through the pandemic as an employer and having employees who could demonstrate to me that that was true, we redefined the structure of, you know, the work and when you had to be in the office. And I think having the ammunition of the examples of what they did accomplish remotely allowed a lot of people to have those conversations, and companies that were not willing to have those conversations are struggling.
Well, I never lose the opportunity to tell the employees here at DE that I was wrong. we have a monthly, what we call all hands meeting, and you know, I was that old fashioned, you know, you have to be in the office to work. Mm-hmm. And I even have people that remind me that I say it wrong. When I say return to work, they mean return. They're like, well, we already are working at home. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, mm-hmm. crap. I didn't say that right. You know, return to the office to work. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've had our two most successful years on record during the two years of the pandemic. Now, what type of a leader would I be if I said, okay, now everybody has to come back to the office? I mean, do I not want to be successful, or do I just not care? You know, and so now what I'm saying, and I do wholeheartedly hope that people, just like you said, want to come back. And I have people that are coming back periodically, you know, and mm-hmm. not every day. But it's fun to see people, you know, and it's fun to interact. And I think for the people that have come back, they've said the same thing. It's fun to you know, reach out and just chit chat a little bit and talk and see one another. You know, we had our annual meeting in San Diego 2 weeks ago, and it was just so nice to see people, you know, face to face. And, you know, and we miss out on that.
Well, I always felt like what you call the water cooler conversations back when mm-hmm. I was in corporate.
Yep.
I had a job where the floor that I was on, it was one great big circle. And so twice a day I'd get up and I would just walk the circle and I would chit chat as I made my way around the circle. And I could talk about projects. I could talk about meetings coming up. I could see people just on the fly without scheduling a time to talk. And that was very productive time. And so I do think you miss some of that, but I also think that today's workers have, to some extent, adapted. And I'll give you another example from our culture. We were in this very little house. And so we all loved it, and there were dogs and cats, and it was very, very lively. But sometimes you just needed to get work done, and so you put your headphones on and you worked. Well, if somebody had their headphones on and you wanted to have a conversation with someone else, you didn't want to be rude. So there was a lot of G-chatting that went on. Mm-hmm. They were sitting across the room from each other, and they were G-chatting, telling jokes, sharing a story, because it was polite. And if it was something that everybody needed to share, then they, you know, just said it out loud. Well, we go home, they already had this G-chat culture established. Mm-hmm. And so the chat would run all day and people would just put comments in it. And it wasn't the same as being there, but it really had a lot of the same flavor, and you still felt very connected.
Well, and we do that with Slack, and we have, you know, we have teams that have their own channels, and then we have general channels, good news channels, industry news channels, and it is fun to have people. You know, we had a baby born last night from, you know, one of our employees. They put paper pictures out, and then everybody comments, and, you know, I mean, and we do share all of that, and the fun part with Zoom, you know, and we all love and hate Zoom, I think, sometimes, but, you know, we've learned employees, you know, pets' names and you know, we children's names, and that adds just another piece of personalization that we've been able to accomplish, which has been nice. It really has. And we can even recognize certain dogs' barks. You know, it's like, okay, I know who that is. That's Lola, or, you know, whomever. That's Jamie's dog. We always know when it's Lola. She's a beautiful German Shepherd. So anyway, we could probably chit-chat forever, but let's shift gears a little bit. You know, the Great Resignation, you hear everybody talk about it, feels, you know, kind of like doom and gloom. But I'm sure it can be for can be difficult for a lot who struggle to fill their open jobs, a lot of employers, but it does create that opportunity for employers to reevaluate their own workplace cultures, their practices, priorities, and to focus on retaining that top talent. So what do you think, or what have you heard, that the reasons employees are citing for leaving the workplace in the first place?
Well, I think on the one hand, there's a level of burnout. I think that really and truly, I think a lot of the reasons are very similar to things I've heard before. They feel underappreciated. Yeah. They're not challenged by what they do. And I think you have to look at not why people are leaving, but why do they stay? And when you talk to people about why they stay, and I think this is really the lesson for companies is, you know, I love the people I work with. Mm-hmm. I love the culture. Well, what makes up culture? And, you know, I think a lot of managers think that it's their job to create the culture. And I think really when you turn it around on the team and you ask them what they want, and you ask them that very question, why do you work here? Or if you could sum up who we are in three words, what would you choose? And then listen. I started the business when it was just me, and I had three phrases that I thought described the company I wanted to build: creativity, collaboration, and positive energy. That was what I wanted. And so I sometimes didn't tell new employees right away that that was sort of my core. And I let them experience the culture for a while, and then we would have that conversation. And it's so interesting that 10, 15 years into the business, those same synonyms, maybe not exactly those words, but those synonyms were still part of who we were. Because as people came on board, we kind of embraced them. There was a way of interacting. There was a way of treating customers and each other that just perpetuated that. But the employees also over time had some phrases that I never really envisioned as part of what I did. But they were passionate about it. And instead of saying, no, that's not what we were about, when faced with three people who like, Lorraine, this is what the company is about, I'm like, well, okay, I guess this is what the company is about.
Well, and again, that's, you know, I wholeheartedly agree with your comment. I mean, you really need to listen. And my favorite phrase is listen to hear, don't listen to respond. So really listen to what people are saying. And I have this kind of a quote requirement that if there's a problem, you know, by all means, come and tell me about the problem. but don't ever come in without a proposed solution, you know, because, mm-hmm. you know, I want to hear you're the expert in that area or whatever area the problem might be, you know, but if it's a real problem, I mean, I know that when I think of something that should be fixed at home, I've got a thought of how I'm going to fix it, you know, and, mm-hmm. and that's worked really well. And, you know, I think people do need to feel like they're being listened to. I was laughing when you first started talking about culture. I think back to 20 years ago, as you were mentioning earlier, when people would say, this is going to be our culture. And I would always, so you find it as silly as I do. It's like, no, that's not what builds a culture. You know, I mean, you have to work together to build your culture. I mean, your LinkedIn mm-hmm. article, you know, covered a lot of those topics as well that you were just talking about, and you know, taking responsibility for your team satisfaction and always be recruiting that you mentioned before. You've got to work. It's kind of like making a marriage work. You've got to make a mm-hmm. business work. You know, you can't just Absolutely. Sit back and rest on your laurels. So
no. And you know, I think one of the other points that I made that I think is really important is once you have a culture that you really like and your employees really like, you need to be very careful about who you hire. Mm-hmm. And right now, as employees are being very selective, I think managers are sometimes panicking and hiring someone because they will take the job and because right. they have the skills. And that's just not enough. I went through a period, I had two employees who are, you're familiar with Winnie the Pooh?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I had not one, but two Eeyores.
Oh God.
This isn't going to work. And I don't know how I missed it in the interview. Maybe they were on happy steroids or something during the interview. Or maybe I just was so desperate, I looked past it. But the longer they stayed, the more they pulled. They sucked the energy out of the room.
Yep.
And I was very fortunate because both of them found other jobs and I didn't have to have the conversation with them that their energy was just really not a fit for ours. But I did appreciate that when they left, we hired one Tigger and one Pooh, and it was a beautiful thing. You know, just the shift in energy, it was like a lightness.
Yeah.
And Eeyore is lovable in his own way, in small doses.
Right.
But not in a small office.
Exactly. You know, and that's one thing I've often said, that I don't care how successful a person is, if they can't be a team player or get along and support their coworkers, that's a problem as well, you know.
And oh, absolutely.
We've got to have teams that work together, and you know, you need to have that respect, that mutual respect in an organization mm-hmm. is what I've learned. But you know, I was talking about our marketing team and, you know, some of the things that they did when we went remote, March 13th, 2020, that day will forever be in my mind. but what suggestions do you have that employers could consider for engaging workers and making them feel like they were more valued and connected?
Wow. Well, one of the things that we did, and this works, I think, when you're in an organization that's more of a sales organization, but I think you can turn it around and do projects instead of customers. I opened it up and I asked everyone to make a list. If we could only work with three customers, who would they pick? And if we were going to fire one customer, who would they fire? And I think you can do it with projects. If we only take on three projects and if we eliminated one task. And what was so interesting is we built the list of the customers that everybody wanted to keep, and there were some names that kept popping up, and we pulled those aside.
Yep.
And those were the ones we then had a conversation around, how do we get more of those? What is it about those customers that we like? and really let the team express they respect our time. The work is challenging. It's an interesting product. I love working with food companies. Whatever it was, suddenly we developed a picture of our ideal client. And it wasn't demographically based. It wasn't statistical. It was based on these are the things we do well. This is the kind of work we like to do. And these are the companies we want to work with. Conversely, and then we developed marketing plans to get more of those clients. So everybody on the team felt really connected to that project.
Well, and, you know, it that's funny because I think, again, I think with some of the activities that our marketing team came up with, you know, it actually, I mean, I can tell it, but it brought people closer together and it helped build the collaboration and the culture that we have today. And I'm pretty pleased with the culture that we have. I think, you know, by doing that in your own organization, you made everyone feel connected and like their opinion mattered. You know, and that's incredibly important because I, as I said earlier, they want to be listened to. And we do surveys and whenever, you know, somebody makes a comment that, well, you know, I wish I could say this. Well, then it's like, okay, well, we need to address that then. You know, I'm a firm proponent of if you do a survey, you have to respond to the results, good or bad.
Yeah.
You need to act on what you find out. But how do you think employers can embrace that flexibility in their own culture?
Well, I think every employer needs to maybe divide the decisions that have to be made every day into what I would call the one right answer or the multiple options. And when it comes to something like that, there's three different ways you can approach a problem. And there's not really a clear right answer. You know, any one of the solutions will work. Bring your team together. Have them hash it out. Mm-hmm. And then let them pick the final solution. If it's viable, they will have way more energy, way more passion at making that project successful because it was their idea than simply executing the one that you pick because you think that's the right answer.
That's really good advice. Well, it's like I said too, they're the experts, you know. I mean, you don't know. I mean, maybe you do, but you know, if it's in their area of work, they should be the experts. That's what you're paying them for.
Absolutely. And you know, as a manager or a business owner, hire people that are smarter than you.
Exactly.
And be okay with that.
Yep,
and don't just pay that lip service. My graphic designers can design circles around me. My gift is
the
Yeah, I mean I'm a production artist.
Okay.
So my skill is being able to look at something, provide feedback, translate what the customer is saying into a direction for the designer, and then get the hell out of get out of their way.
It's funny. I was on the phone today with three technical developers, and they were asking me questions, and I just said, "Well, this is great. What I would recommend here is, you know, I mean, I can give feedback." But, you know, they can tell me how it can be done. You know, I can't tell them how to do it, but I can tell them what I want to have in the process. And then they'll be creative and come up with a way of doing it, you know? So
absolutely. And, you know, if you hire technical experts, you know, my web team, these were technical experts, then invest in them building their technical skills. When somebody on my design team came and said, hey, I'd like to go to this seminar. I'd like to register for this course. I'm going to learn X, Y, and Z. I was like, yeah, if we can afford, you know, I mean, and we were a small company, so they weren't going to $5,000, you know, conferences on my nickel. But, you know, we were a WordPress shop, and there was a WordCamp in Ohio or Cincinnati or Louisville. And I'm like, take the weekend, go. You know, take the days off next week, because what they learned, number one, it was invaluable and we got the benefit of that.
Exactly. Yep.
But then on the other hand, they felt valued, and they kind of believed, and rightly so, because I really did mean this, that I was interested in them, you know, for the long term.
And that is incredibly important. I mean, I'm listening to you talk, and it sounds like you empower your employees a lot, which, mm-hmm. I mean, they always say that empowered employees are happier employees or just happy employees. I mean, I'm sure that has helped with your retention as well, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And full confession, I sold the agency a year ago.
Oh, really?
So now I do online training and I do the podcast. But during the 20 years that I had the company, yes, there were some people that came and went because that's the nature of the design business.
Right, right.
But, and that's the nature of hiring young professionals right out of school. You know, they're going to try for a while. But my web designer was with me for 7 years. My graphic designer, the one who was with me the longest, she was with me for 8 years. And part of the successful transition, so we didn't have that disruption, was having open, honest conversations with these employees about what they wanted to do long term. I knew for a year that my web designer, who was with me for 7 years, was going to leave. I knew he was looking for other jobs. We talked about interview strategies. We talked about what he was looking for and why he would want to do what he did. And in return for that environment where he could talk about that, he gave me some really amazing gifts. He documented and detailed his process. He wrote the job description for the person that needed to replace him.
Wow.
And we talked very honestly about the fact that it was not going to be a clone of him, that the organization had changed and that we needed different things.
That's pretty incredible to get that type of insight and willingness to, you know, but then again, not everybody leaves because they're unhappy with the organization. You know, we have, knock on wood, I don't ever want to take advantage of this, but we really don't have hardly any turnover at all. We lost a person a month or so ago, and it was because he was offered a job of a lifetime, you know, and it was something mm-hmm. he'd always wanted to do. And he called me personally to tell me, and I said, you know, I would never stand in somebody's way for that, ever. You know, but we haven't lost anybody else in over a year or longer, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm not going to stand in somebody's way, you know, and he's available for consultation if we need him, you know, and those are the types of relationships, you know, that you want. You know, mm-hmm. so you had a small organization. I have a small organization, and I think we probably are pretty close in how we see things and manage the businesses. But what are other ways that maybe larger employers can show that they value their employees? What are your thoughts?
I think in any job, you want to continue to feel challenged and engaged, and maybe the job that the person has is fairly stagnant, but the person is not stagnant. And so look for opportunities to create committees and teams to address issues. My daughter was at Delta for 5 years, and I thought that the plumbing company, and I thought they did a really fabulous job. She was on the supply chain team, and that was her primary job. But they always had these Six Sigma teams that were popping up process improvement teams. And her boss would encourage her, you know what? They need somebody with your organizational skills on that project. I'm going to recommend they put you on that team.
Hmm.
Or I think if you join this committee, it's, you know, they meet during work hours, and it's on diversity and inclusion. Why don't you participate on that committee? It gave her an opportunity to flex her muscle in different ways. It gave her an opportunity to meet other people in the company.
Gave her some visibility.
And I mean, she was there for 5 years before she made a shift. So, and I think in this day and age, 5 years, if an employer has somebody that stays 5 years, they should count themselves lucky because the world is changing very, very quickly. And so I think in larger organizations, don't pigeonhole your people. There are all sorts of things that have to get done that aren't really managed by any department, but still have to happen.
You know, that you're exactly right. And there are times when people will suggest, you know, we need somebody to do this or we need somebody to do that. And I have some ideas of making some suggestions on things like that myself. But you're exactly right. And that's something that people don't normally think about. You know, they just think about, you know, it just gets done, but they don't really think about how or who does it. You know, it's just an extra, you know, responsibility that somebody else just absorbs, but there's so many of those extra responsibilities, it could probably take one person to do all those, you know, extra responsibilities. So,
well, or you have these responsibilities and you bring a team together, and it's not a permanent team.
Exactly.
But you have a team, you bring a team together of people who are impacted by antiquated software or a process that's been the same for 20 years and doesn't quite work so well. You put them in a room for 2 days and out come amazing recommendations.
You know, and you're exactly right. I mean, I talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion and including people with disabilities in that metric. And just the different frames of reference and the different perspectives that you can gather when you bring people that aren't best friends together. You know, I did that with a team of four individuals to develop our business continuity plan. People from four different departments and our outside security consultant, cybersecurity consultant, said it was the best business continuity plan he'd ever seen. And it was kind of like,
wow.
And I just picked people that I thought would devote themselves to doing a good job. And I'm going to take credit for having picked well, but I didn't do anything. I mean, they did it all. So, I mean, I'm only taking credit in choosing the right people, but I mean, I could have easily chosen, you know, four other people that probably would have done an equally good job, but it was just kind of a neat exercise because I just said, here's what I want you guys to do and you figure it out. And I mean, they did an amazing job. So, you know, one last thing, you know, I think you've done a little research on us and helping employers expand their recruitment brand and career site visibility is, you know, something that we're obviously passionate about. How do you think that employers can use their career site as part of their efforts to market themselves to potential candidates?
Oh my goodness. So this is so critical because this is the first introduction. I think you need to think about your career site with as much energy as you think about the landing page and the marketing page of your website for customers. Because those potential employees, you need to treat them like customers.
That's an interesting statement. I agree. That's a really good statement. We need to write that down, Jordan.
But I think you need to think about why would someone want to work with you? And it's the same challenge that I think business owners have when they have to answer the question, why should I buy from you? And I'll give you a clue. It ain't about you, it's about them. And so on your employee site, you need to lead with not how much money they're going to make and what the job responsibilities are. Get to that later. If you want me to be excited about your company, be exciting, be interesting. Tell me what's in it for me. If you're starting out your career, you're going to be paired with experienced professionals who are going to be able to give you insight, train you, and give you opportunities to learn and grow on your own. If you're in the middle of your career, ready for that next step, we have opportunities that allow you to mentor other people, blah, 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 blah. If you're a senior executive, we want to tap into your expertise because we want to learn from you.
Wow. So this is going to be a public podcast, but Jordan is part of our Recruit Rooster team, and they develop career websites. So we're sitting here shaking our heads going, oh, my gosh, that's incredible. So I'm going to ask you if I can take a little bit and piece out of your comments for a testimonial, or not a testimonial, but kind of a suggestion. I mean, that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that. I mean, treating applicants like customers, that I think is brilliant. I really do. So thank you for that. That you were right. See, you're saving that nugget. That was kind of the nugget for almost the very end. So that was brilliant. So that was really something. But any final thoughts you'd like to share?
We've covered
a lot. So
we have covered a lot. I guess what I would say in closing is, if you're an astute leader or an astute manager, one of the best things to do is to watch the body language of people as they walk into the building. Now, I know this is harder to do when everyone is remote, and I haven't quite figured out exactly how to do this over Zoom. But I had a guy, he would walk through the door and his body would just like collapse inward. Because he didn't even realize he hated the job. It was his first job out of college, and but he wasn't any good at it. And I finally pulled him into my office and I said, you know what? You don't love this. It's so obvious. Let's talk about why, and let's talk about what will make you love this. If you think you've built this great culture, that's a really good process check to just watch people as they come into the building.
That's a really good point.
Do they smile? Do they look around? Or do they put their game face on and you can't see it? And I understand that not everybody reads body language well, that the art of visual cues is lost on some people. Find someone who's good at it and station them near the door.
Exactly. That's interesting. Yeah, that's a really good point. Well, okay. I like to end on a fun note on all of our podcasts, and I'm going to give you 5 rapid-fire questions to help our listeners get to know you just a little bit better on a personal level. So all you have to do is say the very first thing that comes to mind. All right? Are you ready?
Okay. I'm ready.
All right. What is your favorite quote?
My favorite quote is, you can't build a reputation on what you're going to do. It's by Henry Ford, and it has sat on my desk for 30 years.
Well, there you go. I like that. That's a good one. All right. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Me too. When are you the most productive?
First thing in the morning and very late at night.
Oh, wow. When do you sleep? That wasn't one of the questions. So this one I think is kind of funny, and I'll tell you my thoughts after you answer it. If you could eat only one food for a week, what would it be?
Chocolate.
Yeah. So I was sitting here looking at that going, I don't know if it'd be chocolate or wine, or I was like, I can't live on wine.
I can't live on wine, but I can live on chocolate.
Exactly. So yeah. You and I have got to meet face-to-face because I think we'd have a lot of fun.
I think so.
All right. Very last one. Left or right-brained?
So I'm kind of a two-hump camel with nothing in between. I have this very, very creative side, which would make people think that, you know, very left brain, very out there, kind of flaky. And then I have the part of me that was going to be a math major. So very quantitative. But the skills in the middle of that don't exist.
That's funny. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're kind of in between. You're kind of the ambidextrous. So you're a little bit left brain, a little bit right brain. So
yes, well, and but none of the middle skills.
Okay. All right. Well, that works. You know, that makes you unique. And there's always good and unique. So Honestly, Lorraine, it's been such a pleasure talking to you today and you know, gaining a new perspective on how employers can best support their employees and hopefully combat the Great Resignation by focusing more inward on their efforts and trying to take care of their employees. If our listeners would like to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
I think the very best way is reach out on LinkedIn. Connect, say hello, tell me that you heard this interview. Okay. I would love to chat. You can also listen to More Than a Keyword wherever you listen to podcasts.
And there you go. So if you listen to this one, then go listen to hers, More Than a Few Words, and that works great. So
awesome.
I really appreciated this, Lorraine. This has been a lot of fun, and you and I are going to hook up. You're right here in Indianapolis, and so we're going to have to get together and maybe have some chocolate and wine for a treat after work one day.
I think that would be fabulous. I'm going to hold you to it.
All right. Sounds good.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lorraine. This has been great. Thank you for tuning in for another episode of the DE Talk podcast. Stay connected with direct employers on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and subscribe to our emails by visiting directemployers.org/subscribe to receive notifications of new episodes each month.